This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We're going to begin today with a closer look at Boston's new approach to fighting prostitution, going after people who pay for sex rather than those who sell it, who are usually women or girls. The idea is that if you can reduce the demand for paid sex, you can reduce prostitution and, with it, human trafficking.
That's the long-term goal. In the short term, the city is aiming to reduce prostitution by 20% in the next 2 years. Boston is joining a number of other cities and countries, including Denver, San Francisco, Sweden, and Norway, that are shifting away from actively prosecuting women in the sex trade and focusing instead on the customers. A key part of this approach involves providing more services for women to help them transition out of the sex trade.
In a minute, we'll hear from two Boston-based advocates pushing for this new approach, from a Canadian researcher who says targeting Johns might actually be harmful to women working as prostitutes. But first, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. He's been advocating for this approach since before he was elected. And Mayor Walsh, good to have you. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me on today.
So why do you think this approach of targeting people who buy sex is the right one?
I mean, there are some studies out there that show that. And also, you know, what's happening here is women are often becoming criminalized here, and people are letting the Johns get away. Some of the reason is because the Johns might be high profile or might be well known in their communities. And people aren't taking, you know, the women in a lot of cases have issues with domestic violence in their home. They're escaping or substance abuse. And it's a different approach. We spoke about it during the campaign. And after getting elected mayor of the city of Boston, I've been able to work with the partners that we have in the domestic violence unit, in the, you know, the sexual trade unit in the city of Boston, the police department.
Mr. Mayor, does this involve a change in law or just a different approach, law enforcement approach?
Well, I mean, I believe there has been some changes in law over the past around human trafficking. When I was in the legislature, both Martha Coakley and District Attorney Ian Conley filed some legislation where we were able to make some changes. Now it's in some ways a little different approach to police that we have to go out there. You know, it's important for us to, and also we have to work with the women once they're caught, to make sure that they get into services. I mean, we have to help women as well, because there's a lot of challenges that they have. There's reasons for why they went into this trade, and we have to help them as well.
In 2011, you just made reference to this, Massachusetts signed a human trafficking law, increasing penalties for people who pay for sex. Has it had the intended effect?
No, I don't think so. You don't see it. And certainly when you talk to the police department and the numbers, the statistics, you don't feel it out there. It's still a big issue. In the past, the way that to deal with prostitution in certain neighborhoods was to push it into another neighborhood, at least in Boston and in probably the other major cities as well. We have to deal with the issue. We can't just push this problem into another neighborhood, because you're talking about human trafficking, you're talking about women and young women for the majority of the trafficking. We have to do more than that.
Mr. Mayor, in a moment, we're going to hear from a Canadian researcher who's going to argue that this approach, going after the Johns, actually could put prostitutes at risk. Because by targeting Johns, you drive the business, the encounters, further underground, which puts sex workers further at risk. What do you think about that argument? Have you heard of that, and what's your response to that?
No, I haven't heard of that, but I think we have to, look at this issue as the underground issue as well. I mean, there's a lot of issue, when people see prostitutes, women working in a street in the public and seeing Johns pull up them at 3 o'clock in the morning, that's one issue. Then we have other issues with businessmen around the city of Boston and around the country who solicit prostitutes as well. And they're in upscale hotels, they're more underground. We have to go at the approach of not just targeting the Johns on the street, but also the Johns that are quietly doing it through the internet, because we have to just try to cut down on the trafficking of women altogether. And the 20% reduction in Boston that we're looking at isn't simply going to be all arrests on street corners. We have to infiltrate those.
Mayor, I think we might have just lost you, but I'm going to ask you one more question. What is the ultimate goal here? You mentioned a 20% reduction, but is the ultimate goal to eliminate prostitution?
I would love to see us heading towards the goal of elimination of prostitution. When you talk to people that are in that business, they don't want to be in that business. They're being taken advantage of. They're being approached and lured into this business. Many of the people in the business have an addiction problem, or so we need to do better than that. We can't have our young people targeted in this type of industry. It's not fair on this, for the, we have to do a better job as a society to end this human trafficking in this basically sex slavery.
All right, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Appreciate having you. Listeners, we want to hear from you. What do you think of arresting and prosecuting people who pay for sex rather than people who are working as prostitutes? Give us a call. Is this the right approach for this city, for this state, or not? You can give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also comment on Twitter and Facebook at Radio Boston. Let me introduce a couple of people right here in the studio. Lena Nealon is Director of Policy and Outreach for the Cambridge-based group Demand Abolition. They're working with the City of Boston on this new program. And Lena Nealon, welcome to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
And Sherry Jimenez, she's Director of the EVA Center, which is Boston's exit program for women looking to leave the sex trade. Sherry herself is also a survivor of the sex industry. She used to work as a prostitute here in Boston. Sherry Jimenez, good to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I'll start with you, Sherry. Give me sort of the best argument of why this approach is a good idea.
Well, first of all, you can't drive this industry any further underground than it already is. This is a huge internet posting. The game has changed here, and so many vulnerable young women get into this. So, you know, what we really want to do ultimately is shut this industry down. And the best way to do it is through focusing on demand, shifting it away from women. You know, historically, women have been sort of stigmatized, criminalized, where men, you know, sort of never been accountable. And this is, you know, we have to understand that prostitution exists because inequality exists. So, you know, too many women are in poverty. Too many men believe they have the right to sexual access. So we're shifting. And this is just globally. This is all over the world. We are starting to see this shift. This is something that can happen. It's, you know, the focus, you know, it because of technology, sort of things have changed, and it's an out of control industry, and it's a violent industry.
Well, let me pick up on that point, and Lynn, I'll put this question to you, because I think one of the ideas that you sometimes hear about prostitution is that it's a victimless crime. And yet I know both of you in here would make the very important point that prostitution is a kind of human trafficking.
Absolutely. It's really important for the listeners to understand, and I think we're seeing the shift in society and understanding that prostitution is anything but victimless. It is inherently violent, not only to the women and girls, the children who are being purchased. It's destructive to communities, the legitimate businesses, even to the buyers themselves. And Ms. Jimenez can speak to this in more depth as she's lived it, but women in prostitution are often coming from very vulnerable situations of sexual violence at home. They're trying to escape something and are often lured into prostitution, feeling that it's the only choice that they do have. And it's, you know, the prostitution and the sex industry is a market like any other. Pimps and traffickers are businessmen, and if there were no buyer, there would be no business. And that's why we're seeing both internationally and the United States, throughout the United States, that law enforcement and activists are understanding that going after the demand is a pragmatic way to dry up the industry.
Mm. Talk a little bit about that, Sherry. I mean, I'd like to hear more about this idea about what drives people to this business, because I think you know, there might be some misperceptions out there about who these people are who choose to do this kind of work.
It's always been an industry that sort of, you know, it's sort of you have a large vulnerable population. It's really about economics here and mm-hmm. about women and about poverty. And, you know, most of the time it's about economic desperation. You know, there's so many things and factors that, you know, sort of kind of lead women into this, you know, and it's a very diverse group of women, but most of us have one thing in common. It's usually about economics here, and it's about the need to make money. Right now we have a huge economic disparity, so we have a huge population of young women that are not able to sort of, you know, are undereducated, don't have viable skills. And so this is what's happening now. And on top of an industry that sort of technology has changed it. So it's really sort of exploded. But it's a violent industry. You know, a lot of us got into it thinking we can make money, that sort of notion. But it's sort of an industry that will take you places you just don't want to go.
Mm. You know, one of the things that we heard the mayor make reference to just a moment ago was that part and parcel of this effort is that you've got to provide help for these mostly women to move into another kind of work. And I'd like to ask you about that. What needs to happen in addition to just going after the jobs?
You know, I think we need a sort of an equal playing field here. You know that this economy, just the fact that education plays a huge role right now. You know, we do, you know, a lot of people do not have that sort of equal playing field. Come out of systems. You know, I've worked with hundreds of women over these years. You know, 50% have reported to have aged out of systems. That means foster care, undereducated, no support systems, no viable skills. So you have to look at, you know, we have a large population right here in Boston, you know, that, you know, circumstances have rendered many women vulnerable into this, you know, no support systems, you know.
So what specifically what kind of support systems should the city be investing in here?
Okay, so we call them exit programs.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is it's sort of like providing access to resources, needed resources, you know, reconnecting young people back into school, into work, you know, identifying, you know, options, creating options, alternatives. And that's what's happening all over the world, is this shift to sort of getting women out of it and then holding those accountable to either the violence that, you know, that exists in this industry, and also, and focusing on the demand. That's what fuels this industry. And it's so normalized now and so huge.
Well, I want to ask you, and Lynn and Neil, and I think you've got some numbers on this. How big is the industry here in Boston? How do we describe what's actually going on?
So as you know, it's an underground industry, so it is hard to capture it. However, we are with prostitution being brokered online. We hear now from law enforcement up to 80% is brokered online. We can also use technology to better assess. Mm. A study of Arizona State University found that 130,000 men in the metro Boston area seek to buy sex through Backpage.com every day. So that's only through Backpage.com in the greater metro area. We interviewed 100 men in Boston who buy sex, and two-thirds of the men believe that women in prostitution are lured, tricked, or trafficked. And 96% said that children are readily available for purchase in Boston's bars and hotels. And we hear from law enforcement that the prostitution is happening during lunch hour in the financial district. It's one of the heaviest time periods for purchasing sex. And so we can see by the demand that it's only increasing, and that the mayor's initiative that we're working with Sherry Jimenez and with the Boston Police Commissioner, that buyers need to be on notice, that your profile and profession are not going to be a way to get out of this, that we are cracking down to dry up the market here.
All right. Listeners, we want to hear from you. What do you think of arresting and prosecuting people who pay for sex rather than the people who are working as prostitutes? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. And let me introduce another voice into the conversation, Dr. Kate Shannon. She's the director of the Gender and Sexual Health Initiative in Vancouver and an associate professor of medicine at the University of British Columbia. She's also the senior author of a study about the effects of the criminalization of those who buy sex. And Dr. Shannon, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I know you're going to provide a slightly different perspective in this conversation. You recently published a study that found that targeting and prosecuting men who buy sex can actually put women at more risk. That sounds counterintuitive.
Certainly. Well, I mean, I guess I should just confirm that our report actually showed that in similar to the previous criminalization model we had in Canada, where we criminalized and targeted clients but not sex workers, we saw the same rates of violence, and we saw the same risks in terms of health and safety to sex workers as in previous criminalized model. So I think the Vancouver actually provides a really important example to cities like Boston that are considering following a similar approach in terms of enforcement and criminalization.
Well, say a little bit more about what the study found. How does criminalizing or going after John's not make it safer for women in the sense that it would dry up the market, as we just heard it described?
Sure. Well, in the Vancouver context, after several decades of missing and murdered women and a long history of kind of violence and really horrible health risks to sex workers, particularly the most marginalized working on the street, the Vancouver Police Department adopted guidelines in January 2013 that explicitly set out to target arrest sex workers, but to continue to enforce arrests on clients. So no longer targeting sex workers, but focusing their arrest and targeting on clients. So it really provided us a critical example to look at the so-called sort of Swedish or Nordic model of criminalizing the purchase of sex. And what we heard from sex workers, and we focused on those in the most marginalized aspects of street-based sex work, was that criminalization and policing continues to target clients, even if they're no longer the targets, that they really are at increased risk for violence, abuse, and poor health. So they're having to rush negotiations or forego screening clients, so jumping into vehicles without checking for critical safety protections, being displaced to really isolated industrial areas where there's increased risk for violence, and a reduced ability to access police protections.
In other words, it sounds like it would sort of push the whole trade further underground. Sherry Jimenez, I'd love to get your response to what Kate Shannon is saying there. What do you hear?
Well, you know, I'm part of a group of survivors, a global network of women, and this has been an old argument here, because what they found in the countries that, you know, implemented the sex purchase law, that it actually did the opposite, because men were very careful because they did not want to be caught, so they actually behaved better. Mm-hmm. And that was out of one study. So this is like, you know, this has been an argument that's going on for a long time. But it doesn't make sense to some of us who have been in the industry and who have talked with hundreds of women.
Hmm. Kate Shannon, does your research lead you or the folks that did the research, to believe that prostitution, that sex work should be legalized, better regulated rather than criminalized?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think this research, along with, an extensive body of evidence by many groups, including ours and others internationally, really suggests that we need to move to decriminalization. I think New Zealand provides a critical example where sex work has been decriminalized, and sex workers, and including their government-owned evaluations, have shown, increased access to health and social protections, and there's no increase in the industry by moving that direction, but we do see increase in protections for sex workers. Mm. And I think it's important to note that for concerns, as the other speakers have talked about, in terms of concerns where there is exploitation and trafficking, I think it's really important that in a criminalized model where the industry is underground, sex workers don't have access to protections. And for those who may choose or want to exit the sex trade, they don't have those options.
So two different views there, listeners. We want to hear from you. What do you think of arresting and prosecuting people who pay for sex rather than people who are working as prostitutes? Or as Dr. Kate Shannon says, is a better approach more regulation, decriminalization? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Lina Nealon, who's director of policy, by the way, policy and outreach at the Cambridge-based group Demand Abolition. I'd love you to respond to Dr. Kate Shannon there, talking about a move toward legalization and more regulation. We know that that's what's happened in parts of Nevada and parts of Europe and other parts of the world. Why not that approach?
So first, I think it's important to note that Dr. Shannon and Ms. Jimenez and I in Demand Abolition, we're all seeking the same goal of safety and well-being of those mm-hmm. in prostitution and the broader communities. And we just have vastly different ways of approaching it. And those who advocate for legalization really are talking about harm reduction, and we're talking about harm elimination. And legalization has proved to be a failed experiment. We look at the Netherlands, the classic case, the red light district, everybody knows. When it was legalized, demand just exploded. It became a mecca for men seeking to buy sex, that you literally couldn't fill the brothels fast enough with, quote, willing victims. What we also saw happen was that it brought organized crime. So not only did sex trafficking dramatically increased, so did the weapons and drug trade. And so the mayor of Amsterdam a few years ago shut down over half of the red light district because police could not handle the influx. We see the same thing happen in Germany. In 5 years after they legalized, sex trafficking increased by 70%. The German Institute for Economic Research assessed 150 countries and found that on average, those who legalized prostitution had the highest rates of sex trafficking. So we see it's a failed experiment. Legalization may sound good in theory, but when you look at it practically, it does not help. And New Zealand as well, we see reports coming out that it actually did not increase women's access to health care or make them feel safer.
Dr. Shannon, I'm sure you want to respond to that. We've got a couple of listeners on the line, a few actually. So let's get some of our listeners involved in this conversation. Lisa is calling from Arlington. Hi, Lisa. You're on.
Hi there. Thank you. I just wanted to say that it seems to me that trying to eradicate demand is problematic, first of all, because that's never seemed to be very successful, and secondly, because it doesn't address the fact that women are pursuing this to pay their bills. And so if you don't provide alternate ways for people to make money, women to make money, then it seems like they would follow the demand underground, whereas places like Sweden and Scandinavia have really strong social welfare systems. They have subsidized child care. They have, you know, health care, all that kind of thing. It seems like that, reducing the need for the job, makes more sense. You know, giving the women more options makes more sense. And then if they want to do it, they also still have access to the protections, as was said.
Well, Lisa, you've got at least two people in the studio nodding their heads, including you, Lena Nealon.
Absolutely. We couldn't agree more that this has to be part of a comprehensive approach. You can't dry up the market and not offer alternative livelihoods for those who are exiting the life. And we do know that the vast majority of women, you know, we're seeing upwards of, you know, over 90% want to leave the life if they felt that they had a choice. So absolutely, we need to provide alternatives. You know, there are incredible organizations like Eva Center that Sherry Jimenez runs, My Life, My Choice, that are giving these women options, the children options. And the great thing is, by targeting the buyers, you can use the fines and fees to pay for those services. We've seen successful models in San Francisco where the buyers come in for an education program so that they hear the effects of their buying on the women, on the communities. And those fees and fines go to services and have raised over $1 billion for services for victims and also money for law enforcement in order to be able to target the buyer. So it has to be a comprehensive approach. But we have seen that going after demand is the most successful. Arresting and rearresting the women is not only ineffective, but further victimizes those in the life.
Dr. Kate Shannon, we only have about 30 seconds left, but I want to sort of get your response to the argument that was put on the table by Lena Nealon just a little while ago that legalization has failed where it has been tried.
Well, I mean, I would say quite the contrary. I mean, New Zealand, including, as I said, the government's own evaluation, has said decriminalization. And I think there's an important distinction in the context of legalization. People often go to places like Amsterdam. And we're talking about decriminalization in New Zealand, where the laws are removed and sex workers have access to the same health and safety protections as anyone else. Just to respond in terms of demand, because I think it's an important context to say that in Vancouver, we saw no decrease in street-based sex workers continuing to work for the very reason that we can all agree it's an economic reason. And like any other job, sex work is to pay the bills is part of an economic context, and we saw no differences for marginalized sex workers, and in fact they spent more hours on the street trying to find clients because of increased policing. So I think that's important to note, that it doesn't, from our evidence, it doesn't suggest there'd be any effect on the decreasing demand side.
Well, obviously this is a debate that'll continue, but Sherry Jimenez, final word from you. You know, we're talking about a 20 year sort of goal here. What would you like to see in the next 5 years in the city of Boston? What would be your indication that progress is being made?
That we can end this industry. It's a violent industry. It is not a job like any other. So calling it sex workers normalizes it. But I want to see what Europe and everywhere around the world is looking for, and that is to end this. You know, women should not be commodified in an industry, in a harmful industry. And we can do this. And we're going to start doing it here in Boston.
All right. Sherry Jimenez, director of the EVA Center, which is Boston's exit program for women to leave the sex trade. Thank you. And Lena Nealon, director of policy and outreach for the Cambridge-based group Demand Abolition. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Kate Shannon, Director of Gender and Sexual Health Initiative in Vancouver at the University of British Columbia, thank you as well. And listeners, stay with us. Coming up, the woman who wrote a memoir about answering fan mail for J.D. Salinger. I'm Anthony Brooks with Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.